Okay, you guys, here we go. She Runs Ultras, episode number 215. We're going to keep the self-care conversation going today with my conversation with Dr. Matthew Allen. He's actually my chiropractor, and I just really love his approach to not only chiropractic, but just like sport and injury and healing all together. And there have been a couple questions that have come up both in DMs and emails and in our Facebook group about how to integrate chiropractic into your run training, what role it plays, how to pick a practitioner. And these are all things that we talk about in this conversation today. So plug this one in for your next long run, and hopefully you enjoy this conversation with Dr. Matthew Allen.
So I kind of want to answer that a little different than in the past, because usually I start with like, oh, I'm a father and I'm a chiropractor. But I think I want to relay the message that I feel like I'm a student, and I always really enjoy learning new things and trying to like just always be a little bit better. And when that happens, you start to open up these doorways of like, oh, I don't think I know what I am doing, and maybe I need to learn more about this. And so yeah, I think I want to start with like, I'm a student. Although I'm a doctor, I'm a student of life, of being a human, of being a father. I'm always learning something. I always enjoy learning new things. But on top of that, yeah, I'm a chiropractor. I've been in this profession for 4 years now. I started this journey back in 2016. I grew up in the Midwest. I was an avid like track runner, cross-country runner, soccer, rugby, racquetball. Like I was always really active and always really moving. And I grew up watching my mom get adjusted by a chiropractor. She had chronic back pain. She got thrown off a horse when she was young. And so I always went to the chiropractor, and I didn't always get adjusted, but I always observed. And my mom always said, oh, you'll be a great chiropractor. And I never, you know, when moms tell you something, you're like, no, I'm not going to do what my mom says. And so I, you know, but I would get adjusted often, especially during sport seasons. Mm. So it definitely during like transition seasons when like the weather was changing and my lungs were always kind of like, oh, can I breathe? Like I'm running a lot. Can I breathe? And so I would always get adjusted, when I like felt like I couldn't breathe. And that always helped like kind of open things up and allow me to perform a little bit better and faster. I did not get into chiropractic because of sports, though. I got into chiropractic because my son had a lot of tension from his birth. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, like this baby's got a lot of tension. Like, do we ignore it or do we do something about it? And so my mom said, take him to a chiropractor. But I was like, I'm not going to trust my baby with just anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to know what that chiropractor is doing. So I initially went into chiropractic because of a little baby's body tension. And I was like, I need to figure out how to work with that. Yeah. And then that journey started in 2016. I moved back to St. Louis. We were living in New Hampshire for a while. Then I moved back to St. Louis to do that. You know, throughout my chiropractic journey, I, you know, played indoor soccer. I was constantly getting adjusted. And then I moved back up here in 2020 to start the practice in Keene. So that's a little bit about who I am, I guess.
So how did you, let me back up for 1 sec real quick, because this, I think this is super interesting. Like, how did you know your baby had tension? Like he was cranky or like, what were the signs? Cause like,
yeah. Yeah. So super cranky, would not take, the breast on one side. He would like be like really mad. You could literally visually see it. You could see his head was shaped different and you're like, whoa, like that baby's got a weird looking head. And so, you know, like just the visuals of like, oh, that head does not look like symmetrical. Yeah. You know, his head or his, you know, he would only go to one side of the breast. So it was like, well, why won't he turn to the other side? I think to most parents, they think, oh, that's just normal. But I was like, no, that's not normal. Mm. Like that's definitely like there's a pattern of tension in his body. So that's kind of like what I saw. And then my mom was like, you got to take him to chiropractor. And, That it kind of scared me because I was like, I don't want a chiropractor touching my baby. But then my mom was like, you got adjusted as a baby. Like right after I had gave birth, like I took you to where I went to school to have the chiropractors check you. Yeah. And so I think more and more people are starting to see the benefit of that. It's just not well known. So yeah, I could just visually see it in him. And then there were just little cues of like, oh, he's colicky. He's not going to the bathroom and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So, and then what did you do? Cause you've been doing this for the last 4 or 5 years. Like, what did you do before that? What was your profession before you were a chiropractor?
Yeah. So I studied adventure education. So I took people out on like rock climbing trips and sea kayaking trips on the coast of Maine. I helped run camps in New England. So I trained leaders who then took people out on trips. I worked for the Appalachian Mountain Club, training, again, those leaders that took people out. So I played in the woods. And it translates really well, though. Like outdoor ed, adventure ed translates really well into chiropractic because when you're in an outdoor adventure setting, there's tons of adversity, right? There's white water that you have to paddle. There's the burnt macaroni and cheese that somebody cooked that you have to eat. And there's like the topography that you have to hike through. And so learning how to navigate people in adversity was like, it became easy. Mm-hmm. And so then when I went into chiropractic, I was like, oh, this is the same thing. People are coming to me with issues and with patterns that they don't know what to do with. Let me just facilitate them and guide them toward a different way. Awesome. So it does translate really well. I'm not outside as much during my day, but
no, that's a lie. I've seen you post pictures of, I think you're probably adjusting your wife though, but like outside on the table.
Right? Yeah. We definitely play outside a lot, but like my work day is in here. My dream would be to have a really cool, patio style adjusting where like I could open in the right seasons. You can just open it up and you're like, sweet, we're getting adjusted outside today. Like,
that'd be
so
cool.
That's a dream.
That'd be cool. Start looking for the space now.
I know, right? Yeah.
So I have another question about just chiropractic in general, because like I think about, you know, when you go to get like certified as a yoga teacher, there's lots of different schools, right? And so is that the same with chiropractic? Like, is there one overarching like school, or are there different sort of philosophies? Like, how does that work?
So there's an overarching board that governs the education that chiropractors receive, but there's many different schools, and many different schools have different philosophies and techniques that they teach. So back in like the 1900s, when you became a chiropractor, once you learned to be a chiropractor, you could then teach chiropractic to anybody and then call them a chiropractor. Now that the regulations behind that were like, all right, we got to rein that in. So now each school, and then another thing back in the 1900s was you would go to a chiropractic school to learn a technique, and then you'd actually, and it was only like 6 months long of an education, and then you'd go to another school to learn that technique. So different chiropractors went to different states to learn different techniques. So I went to Logan University, which is in Missouri, and Logan University is based off of a technique called Logan Basic, which is the sacrum and the pelvis. So how is the pelvis moving biomechanically? Because all else will follow. Now there's other schools that look at the occiput and the upper cervical spine, and they say, well, whatever is happening up here, all else will follow. And so neither are right, neither are wrong. There's just different approaches, different angles and lenses to look at. But the pelvis to me is definitely like, I like working with the pelvis because we locomote from that. That's where we move from. And you know, it just makes the most sense to me. So yeah, Logan was focused on the pelvis. Logan was very more, I would say it's a lot more medical than other chiropractic schools. So Logan had a really, really intensive clinical study. And so you had to like really know rehab. You had to, you know, wear your white coat and act like a medical doctor when you go into these rooms, which was good because I learned really quickly how to identify things that are not in my scope, right? Like, oh man, like, you got to get out of my office like right now. That's an abdominal aorta. Like, go away. Like, you know. So that was good to know that. Other schools are very philosophical driven, which means they really focus on like that nervous system and like the inherent ability for the body to heal, which is true. But sometimes they would take that to the extreme of like, you only need chiropractic. And it was like, yes and no. You need other things too. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I like about your approach is that, you know, you do a lot of listening. Like, you know, I've been to other chiropractors where they're just like, you know, get on the table. We're just going to go through the standard, you know, I'm going to adjust here and then here and then here and then here. And sure, that might work, but I'm just more of a fan of your approach where you like listen to what's going on, like hear me, but then also watch how I move. And, you know, you have such a good background in sport too, because, you know, there's a difference between chiropractors who, and this is no knock on anybody else, but just chiropractors that like just do the business of chiropracting. And then there are chiropractors who do the business of like being an athlete and chiropracting. And so they understand a little bit more on a deeper level, the ins and outs, the stress of the body, how you use your body, like all those different things, as opposed to, you know, that more like, you know, 9 to 5, like chiropractic kind of approach, you know?
Yeah. And I'll speak on that. I think most people do not come to a chiropractor for chiropractic, right? They come to a chiropractor for a result, right? They want to get better at X, Y, or Z, or they want to get rid of something. They're not there for the adjustment. They, they are there because they've tried everything else and things aren't working and things aren't sticking. And it's like chiropractors are often the last form of result. They're like, dude, I've tried everything else. Like, will you? And so for me to be like, oh, I'll adjust you, you know, it's like, yeah, I'll do that. But let me figure out what you want. Like, do you want to be faster? Do you want to get rid of this hip pain? Or is it really like the fact that you can't play with your kids in the evenings and you can't put your sock on comfortably? Like, that's truly what people wanted. That's what they want. Yeah. They don't want to get adjusted. They want to get a result. So yeah, I have to listen. And I think there's benefit in really understanding what is this person really here for.
Yeah. So I guess if you had it like in your sort of perfect world, like where does chiropractic fit in with, you know, all the other, like, let's just say like health modalities, like going to the dentist, going to your PCP, like, and like, or even massage and yoga and like hiring a personal trainer, like where does chiropractic in your mind fit into that?
Yeah. I'll be totally honest. I think chiropractic should be like the first thing, the first person that a baby interacts with, right? Like most babies interact with like a needle or like a lotion or a pill. And it's like, whoa, that baby just came out of a tiny little birth canal.
Yeah.
And that baby's fallen a bunch, like that kid's learning to crawl and walk and they just fell, or maybe they got in a car accident. And so you live your life through your nervous system, like straight up, like we interpret and we perceive, we know when somebody comes into the room, if they're bad juju, like you kind of just like get this feeling. So like your nervous system is constantly working and reading its environment. And so if you have tension patterns along your body, along your spine, along your extremities, your nervous system is going to be playing this game of like, is this safe? Is this not safe? Do I need to create compression? Do I need to create expansion? And so honestly, I think chiropractors should be like the top person that somebody goes to when they first have something going on. Because a chiropractor is going to look at the whole system. I'm not just going to look at a symptom, right? When you go to a medical doctor, it's like, oh, you have heartburn, here's a pill. Why does that person have heartburn? Why does that person have high blood pressure? Most likely the environment, right? What are they putting into their body? What is their stress levels like? And so in chiropractic, there's three forms of stress. There's physical stress, there's chemical stress, and there's mental stress, right? So we're going to look at those three and we're going to ask questions about those three. Most people are afraid of falling into the world of chiropractic because they feel like I got to go forever if I go.
Yes.
But I'll counter that with saying, well, you go to the dentist every 6 months, most likely, or you brush your teeth every day and every night. Why would you not take care of your spine the same way, right? Like oral hygiene is huge, right? Like you look at somebody and you're like, oh, their teeth are clean. Like they got their shit together. You look at somebody and like they're hunched over and you're like, oh man, why didn't they take care of their body? So we use this vessel. We use our body all the time. And you cannot replace your spine straight up. Like you cannot take a part out and put it back in. Like this is your means of expression. And so I truly believe chiropractic should be a very like first line of contact healthcare provider. That doesn't mean you get adjusted every time.
Yeah.
But it just means like, hey, this doc is not necessarily going to jump right away to a pharmaceutical, or this doc is not going to jump right away to a Band-Aid. They're going to see like, what's really happening in this body? Is this a nutritional pattern that needs to be addressed? Is this a mental pattern that needs to be addressed? Does this person need yoga? Mm-hmm. Does this person need to like go outside and put their feet on the ground?
Yeah.
So yeah, honestly, like, and again, it's a strategy. Chiropractic is a strategy. It's not necessarily a treatment modality. It's a strategy. It's You do it because you know it's going to benefit you in the end. Right? I go to the gym and I take care of my body because I know it's like that's my healthcare, right? I get adjusted every 3 weeks, but like my main form of healthcare is like, okay, how am I going to move my body this morning and today?
Yeah. And variety of movement too. Like that's something that like, you know, I know you're big on and I'm big on too. Like, you know, even if you have a dominant sport like running, you need to do other things as well, right? The strength training aspect of it, the mobility piece of it, which I know you're big on too. You know, all these other inputs feed into that one main thing, and those are actually going to help you excel faster, so to speak, right? You're going to get to where you want to go faster because you're not just relying on one tool to do the job. Like you have all these other tools that are going to help you get there faster for sure. And like, so I guess sort of like shifting gears, if when it comes to running, like say, you know, obviously we're talking about running specifically, but just sports in general, is there a specific like guidance or protocol that you would give someone like as far as trying to incorporate chiropractic into their, like, let's say they've never been before and they're a little hesitant because they've heard some stories, like really great stories and like not so great stories. Mm-hmm. Like, how would you approach them? Like, how would you get them convinced to go?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so I, if somebody's terrified of a chiropractor, don't go to a chiropractor, right? Like find somebody, like go to a PT, right? Like if you're terrified, if you're like, no, then don't do it, right? Like you can lead a horse to water, but you can't force them to drink. So like I would never force anybody to be like, you need chiropractic. But I guess like I like to think about say you're a runner and say like let's talk about like why people even go to chiropractic. One is pain, right? The first is like, oh man, my hip, right? Like when I'm striking on my right foot, when I'm running and I strike on my right foot, like I get this hip pain. Okay, there's a pain pattern going on. So like, is it your hip? Is it your foot? Is it your ankle? Is it the mobility of like internal, external rotation? Is it your thoracic rotation? So again, if there's a pain pattern, I would say that's a good opportunity to seek out a chiropractor, especially if you're doing all the things and nothing's working, right? If you're stretching and you're strengthening and you're massaging and you're doing PT and OT and it's not resolving, it's like, okay, what about this? So I think if there's pain patterns, that's a good starting point. performance wise, right? So a lot of pro athletes, a lot of performance athletes, Olympic athletes, professional teams, they all have a chiropractor on their team. They all utilize the chiropractor, not necessarily when they're in pain, but for performance. There's some really cool studies with Tibetan monks and with geriatric patients for speed and like striking ability and lifting the hip. And they broke a lot of people up into groups of like a massage group, a sham group, and a chiropractic group. And all the chiropractic group was faster and could swing faster and could swing harder after adjustments, because what you're doing is you're clearing this pathway, you're clearing this channel. And so the brain can then communicate to said body part at a much faster rate and a more clear rate. So it's like, it's not staticky. It's not like a staticky cell phone. Like when you're in the woods, it's like, oh, that goes fast and I'm going to be able to hip, like move that hip in a better range of motion. So I think if somebody has pain, and one of my things I wrote on my notes was like, you know, you asked like kind of how would you integrate chiropractic into this? And so I have rules of three. So the rules of three are like three or more days of discomfort in some body part is a good time to have somebody look at it. So like one day of discomfort, whatever, deal with it. Like see if you can do something about it. 2 days of discomfort, try to keep working, right? Give your body some time to adapt. Three or more days and you're still doing stuff and it's not working, that's a good time to get checked. Three or more body parts, right? So like my ankle hurts, my hip hurts, my knee hurts, my head, I got headaches, or my belly is not digesting certain foods. Like three or more systems that are calling out to you and draining you from energy, that's another good time to get checked. And then I like my established clients, I always say once we're done with a care plan, I always say three or more weeks is a really good time. Like 3 weeks keeps you in this nice window of I don't want to say adaptation, but like stress happens all the time. And if we go out 6 weeks, 10 weeks, we're now jumping island to island. And it's like, oh man, so much stress built up in the body. And now we gotta start back over and repattern some stuff. Yeah. I don't know if that answered your question, but.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think that's a great rule for people too, because that they have a hard time. You know, I do agree with your opinion. I think like early on when I was introduced to chiropractic, I had a, I just wasn't sold on the idea. I was skeptical of someone else manipulating my muscles and joints, and wasn't sold on the fact that they weren't going to injure me. Like, you know what I mean? Like I just was very skeptic of the whole thing. And it got to a point, and so I didn't use it. And then I was, I don't remember how it happened, but I got this kink in my neck and it was so bad. And it definitely went on. It definitely violated your rules of three, because it definitely went on for like, I tried to work on it myself for a day or two. And then I was doing heat and I was rolling and I was doing all the things, and it just kept going and going. And I can't remember how long it had to have been, like over a week. And I think back, cause this was like pretty memorable. I was such a bitch. I was in so much pain. And like, you know, when your neck and your shoulder hurts and you can't turn your head, I was just miserable.
Stuck.
And yeah, I was totally stuck and it was so painful. And so I went to a chiropractor. It wasn't you. This was before I knew you. And he did a little assessment on me and he was like, look, we can do this. And I was pretty adamant. I was like, I do not want you to quote unquote crack my neck. Like, I don't want you to manipulate my neck. Cause I just had this fear of being paralyzed, legit. And he was like, okay, well, we can do this one of two ways. Like, we can do it sort of like your way, the way you've been doing it, and we can work all around the area, or we could do it my way, which is to be like the fast, quick way of adjusting you, and you'll have basic like instant relief. And I was like, I thought about it for a second and I was like, okay, but you can't tell me when you're going to do it, because I was already super tense.
Yeah.
And so he like did a bunch of other stuff, and then you know, I tried very hard to just be as relaxed as possible, because I was like, I know I'm going to do more damage if I'm like really tense and fighting it. And he did ultimately end up, I was like right around like my upper cervical spine. Yeah. And it helped. It resolved 50% of the pain, but the remaining 50% was, I think, because I was just stuck in that position for over a week and my body was just revolting. Like my muscles were sore, like everything was totally out of whack. But I mean, that's like, I don't tell that story to like implant fear in anyone else.
No, yeah.
I hear it a lot from other people. They have the same reservations about someone else manipulating their body. And I think, I mean, I don't know what you would say about that. I'll hold my statement. You talk on that.
Yeah, let's go to that. Well, let's first talk about like the risk, right? So many people, right, are like, oh man, like I don't want somebody to crack my neck. Like I've seen these movies where like, you know, these ninjas crack. And here's the deal. If chiropractic was that risky, my malpractice would be as much as your medical doctor's, right? My malpractice is really, really cheap compared to an allopathic provider, because there is such little risk. Now, that doesn't mean shit doesn't happen. It often happens to people in a situation, right? They've already got signs of a stroke going on. They've already got something really going on, and that doc's not paying attention, and that doc's not listening, and that doc has a high volume practice, and people are laying down, and he's not looking them in the eyes, and he's not asking them what's new, and he's not asking them to tell him something good. So that it can happen for sure. I take the approach that every chiropractor adjusts differently, right? So many docs will try to find restrictions and say, we're going to blast through that restriction quickly, which can have a potential benefit for sure. Some docs are very, very light, and it is a slower process where it's like, we're going to be on this journey together for 6 months because we're going to go light. I like to look at the body and say, okay, where's my window of opening where the nervous system is at ease and that the prefrontal cortex is not in a fear state? Because if we can adjust, then the brain can then say, oh, sweet, like that. Mm-hmm. I wasn't scared. I wasn't guarding. I wasn't tricked and told to like shake my toe so that the doc could adjust me. That is a better approach, I think, than like, we're just going to do this fast and be over with it. Now, you also have to think too, chiropractic is manual medicine, which means you don't see results right away, right? Sometimes you don't get 100% better. Sometimes it's only like 50% better and then 10% better, and healing is nonlinear. So if you held on to a pain pattern for 8 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever, you're going to have to treat this like a gym, and you're going to say, okay, cool, I want to get here. I'm going to have to do some work, and I'm going to have to allow my body to cut the inflammation. And sometimes the doc will actually re-inflame a spot so that the body can re-heal itself, mm-hmm. and then process it. And then it's like, cool, now let's go anti-inflammatory. Let's be lighter and gentler and not inflame it today. Maybe we adjust it yesterday, but we don't adjust it today. Mm. And maybe we do something totally different today. But yeah, I think most people have that fear, especially if they've had a bad experience or they know somebody that's had a bad experience. Mm-hmm. They're like, nope, you won't find me in that office. And that's, I can respect that, but I also have to say fear freezes people. And when you live in fear, you often close the opportunities for something beautiful to happen or to take place. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah. I love what you said about healing being nonlinear. I wrote that down to remind myself because I think that's like super important. We just think that, and I can't blame us sort of as a society. Mm-hmm. We've sort of been sold problem, solution, resolution, yeah. right? And so it seems pretty linear. It seems like there's a step-by-step process, and there is, but sometimes there's going to be like zigs and zags in there. Yeah. You know, you'll get adjusted. And then, you know, my experience has been, you know, especially with like a lot of mobility stuff too, you sort of address one area and then another area pops up and mm-hmm. is like, oh, hey, like yep. you didn't even notice me because this other thing was screaming so loudly. Now it's time to deal with me. And it's sort of, I kind of likened it to like a pinball machine because mm-hmm. sometimes you like deal with one thing and then your attention gets shifted over here. You deal with this thing. And that doesn't, in my mind and in my body, that doesn't necessarily mean that any one of those things is a particular problem. It's just what you said, like this healing is nonlinear. Like you just have to keep yeah. sort of addressing the things that pop up and you'll continue to get to a better place. If we ignore it, then the opposite will happen. Everything just gets amplified. You start to mm-hmm. like, you know, sort of like close in on yourself and just become less mobile. You don't do as much movement. You stay more stagnant and stationary, and like all body systems just start to deteriorate.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of your questions or, you know, points of content was like, and maybe I'm jumping the gun, but like things yeah. to look for mm. or maybe things to like, cause again, it's a choice, right? Going to a chiropractor's choice, and there's many different choices, especially if you live in different areas, like you've probably got a lot in your area. I would say one thing to really monitor, especially if you're an athlete, especially if you're a runner, is calling up the offices and saying like, does the doc work with this X, Y, or Z hip mobility? Does the doc do myofascial release? Does the doc, you know, help with knee pain? And if that person that answers doesn't give a quick yes or no, like be aware of that. Be like, if they kind of stagger on it, be like, okay, maybe they don't really work with that. Mm-hmm. And if the doc doesn't give homework, that's a red flag, right? If yeah. the doc says you're too stiff, you only need adjustments for the first 4 weeks, it's like, bullshit, dude. Like this person does need adjustments, but they also need to take ownership of this and learn, okay, how do I mobilize? How do I stabilize? How do I strengthen? Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't do it all on the same day, but they need to have a game plan. So I would say, you know, pick and choose an interview and go to the office and be like, do I like the vibe here? Mm-hmm. Do I like the smell here? Is it too medical? Is it too crunchy? Like, yeah. You know, is this do I want to spend 20, 30 minutes in this place or do I not? Because that's going to mm-hmm. kind of dictate like how you heal or if you heal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so good. Can we go back for 1 second? Because your point about the homework, I think that there might be a common misconception, and I only say this because I have heard this from from some people about like, again, going back to just adjust, you get an adjustment and then you're good to go like about the, you know, about your life, about go on with the rest of your day. I don't know how to frame this question so that it sort of like makes sense, but when you get adjusted, you're moving from, let's say, like, you're moving just for the purpose. I know this is not true.
Sure, but
let's,
yeah,
just for the purposes of this, like, you're moving sort of like from a crooked line, like zigzag line, to a straight line.
Okay.
Right. And so, like, the way that your body operated under the crooked line is different than the way it's going to operate on the straight line. And so I think people don't understand that when you move from crooked to straight, the homework piece, right? That, like, now you sort of have to reinforce the straight because your default for so long had been the crooked. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I actually have a note on this. Chiropractor, right? So you got to remember, chiropractors are not PTs. Chiropractors have training in rehab, and some docs like to do rehab. So, like, there are certain things that I enjoy rehabbing. There's certain things I do not enjoy rehabbing. So, like, knees, don't enjoy rehabbing. Shoulders and hips, I do enjoy rehabbing. But, like, knees, no thanks. Knees and ankles, it's like, yeah, like, I can give you some ideas, but, like, maybe you should go to the PT that's in my office. Like, they'll be better. And so let's talk about, like, the crooked line, straight line. So let's just put it out there. Like, none of our bones are really out of place, right? They're not, like, a chiropractor's not moving a bone from left to right. They're taking a pattern that is biomechanically faulty, right? Maybe the joint or the muscle or the capsule of joint fluid is inflamed. And so the doc is quickly gapping a joint and quickly giving a new mechanoreceptor input to those muscle bellies.
What does it mean when you say gap a joint? Just because, like, yeah, lots of people listening to this will be like, I have no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah. So when you hear a crack, right? So crack is like, eggs crack, humans don't crack. But when you hear that crack, that is a joint gapping. And so PTs mobilize joints. So they kind of take a joint and they push it, and they move it around. Chiropractors gap joints. We actually take that joint to a different zone and we say, we're going to open this joint quickly and fast, and it's going to open and it's going to get filled with white blood cells and lymphatic system, and it's going to clean itself up. Mm-hmm. So when a chiropractor gaps a joint, it's interrupting an aberrant or abnormal pattern. So think of that staticky cell phone that we talked about. So when your body is, I'll say, out of space, right? It's kind of in a crooked line. Your brain is sending abnormal information. It's saying, I think I should go left, but really I'm going to fire to the right. I'm going to fire the inside of this muscle instead of firing my glute. I'm going to fire all my adductors instead of my glute. And so chiropractors interrupt a pattern. We basically are adjusting a pattern that's not correct, and we interrupt it and we say, all right, we need to now rewire and rebuild this pattern. And so you have this beautiful moment after an adjustment to then rehab, to then say, cool, my brain has now perceived itself differently. Let's fire these muscles in a slow, controlled manner so that the brain can start to say, oh man, I haven't turned that glute on in weeks. I've been firing my hamstrings, but I haven't been firing my glute med. Like, that's what it's supposed to feel like. Holy shit. Like, it feels weird. It feels different than the other side. And so as you get adjusted, you integrate or you interrupt old patterns. And then you start to, as you rehab, you start to rebuild and rewire these new mechanics and these new neurology of, like, oh, this is how I fire. And then you take that to the sport. And then you say, okay, cool. Now that I'm adjusted, now that I've rehabbed a little bit and repatterned these new, like, it's basically like software for a phone, right? Like, your brain and central nervous system is the software. All your muscles and tissues are hardware. And so sometimes our hardware starts to really, like, take a beating because our software is not talking to it. So you got to go in, re-up the software, and then you got to say, okay, cool, let's clean up this hardware. Let's scrape it. Let's go to, like, create mobility there. Let's strengthen it with weights or with isometric contraction. So there's this kind of golden window after an adjustment to then rehab an area, because your body will ultimately say, this is not where I've been. This is not my stride, right? Like, I'm not used to this stride. I'm used to a different gait pattern. And so it'll want to go back to that old gait pattern. So that's why it's wise to utilize chiropractic in this momentum-based kind of chunk of time where it's like, let's really focus intensively for the next maybe 90 days of, like, all right, if you've got a pain pattern, let's go 90 days of, like, care, where maybe we see you up front for a quick little bit, but then we start to, like, decrease our care. So yeah, it's like, let's interrupt it, let's rebuild it, rewire it, and then let's reintegrate it into the sport or into whatever modality you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes total sense. And that's definitely something that like I've experienced as well, is, you know, that's like, I haven't seen you since I did it, but like about four weeks ago, I rolled my foot pretty hard to the point where like I ended up in the ER because I thought I had broken it. But I didn't. And now I'm just dealing with like this weird soft tissue injury that's kind of been a pain in my butt for the last 4 weeks. And I went for a very short run yesterday that was mostly walk, kind of shuffle. Like if you watch, I posted a video about it yesterday. If you watch the video, my gait is so terrible because it's like I'm babying that foot, because instantly, right, when I left my house and went on the flat, and I was just going to, I ran on the surface roads because I know I'm not trail qualified yet. So I was just running on the flat road. The first few steps I took flat, so my, you know, foot basically landing at around 90 degrees, because I wasn't really running, I was just shuffling. I got a massive amount of feedback from that foot, like, oh, hell no, like we are not doing this. And so I turned it back to a walk for a little bit. And then I just sort of played around with it. I tested it out. Uphill, definitely no good. Downhill, like a slight decline, okay. Flat, doesn't love it. But it was a real, like I've been doing a ton of FRC work on it, but it was like a real interesting experiment to go out and, you know, and I've really been trying not to change how I walk to accommodate for it so that I don't mess things up in terms of, you know, my gait and everything else, like sort of going back to what I was talking about earlier, like if one thing is sort of out of whack and then you sort of resolve that thing, then another thing rears its head. I didn't want to then have a knee issue or a hip issue or like have a spine problem. So I've been trying to, but yesterday was really, was like very humbling and very interesting for me. Yeah. I was like 4 weeks.
Yeah. Small steps. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you would think, because I've been able to walk on it relatively pain-free, like inversion, eversion, like that's really my problem. And any sort of like torque to my foot is no good. But I've largely been pain-free, you know, and I think this is the, like the place where people get into trouble, especially us runners, because we have this sort of thing ingrained in our brain where we're like, okay, it's been 4 weeks now, I should be good to go, you know? And I really had to pump the brakes on myself because I have that. And I was like, look, if I don't pump the brakes, I'm going to come back too fast. I'm going to cause myself real issues. I really am going to break it in the form of like, I'll end up with a stress fracture or something.
Yeah.
So it's been really challenging. And I think, again, this is where runners in general, and really any athlete, can fall under this category. We get into trouble because we just want to get back to doing our sport and we're largely pain-free and we have halfway decent range of motion. So we're like, okay, great, we're going to go. And then I look at that as like, you're just slowly chipping away at your, I don't even know what I would call it, like your overall capacity, I guess, as an athlete. If you just keep working with these joints and ranges of motion that aren't, and I know not everything is going to be 100%, but I don't know how to describe it. Like you're just sort of chipping away at yourself, you know?
Yeah. And I think too, like, give yourself grace. Like 4 weeks is nothing in the scheme of things for an injury, right? Like soft tissue damage can take, you know, 6 months to heal.
I know.
And so what I would say is like, yeah, go for walks, but also like put that foot in rice and like smooth into eversion X, like give it stress, but give it stress in a very controlled manner where it's like the moment I stop, I know I'm safe.
Yeah.
But if you're out running on a trail and you're like, fuck, dude, I gotta walk home 2 miles. Like,
yep,
I might be in trouble. So like, that's why I do like sleds and that, you know, at the gym, like I love that sled and I need to use it more because the moment you stop, you're safe. And you're like, oh, cool. Like I'm not going to, like if you're put, you know, a bar on your back, like you better get up. And so being able to modify movements and find safe ways to still load it and still give it input, but also know, okay, I need to chill. And 4 weeks is very small in the healing scheme.
You're not the first person to tell me that too. And it's like, I didn't have, let's just be 100% clear. I did not have any grandiose idea that I was going to walk out my door and actually run. Like, but it, I had literally never, you know, it's probably been, so I was non-weight bearing on it for an entire week, which was massively frustrating to me, hobbling around on crutches, went to the ortho, got it x-rayed again. And he, I mean, I can't say that I was like super impressed with my appointment because he basically like just sort of, I mean, like barely touched it and was like, does this hurt? Does this hurt? Does this hurt? And I was like, well, no, like it's, you know, and then he was like, okay, well, you're good to go. And so I almost played dumb because I am who I am. And I was just, because I like teach mobility and I was just like, so like, what should I do? And he was like, well, you know, you could brace it, but, you know, I would just try to operate as pain-free as possible. I was like, do I need PT? He was like, nah, I don't think so. I was like, holy shit. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Here I go. Like, and then I like switched from like have my patient hat on to like, okay, now I'm an FRC instructor. Like, and I just set about like, you know, rehabbing myself. But I just feel for all the people who don't have, and I am like very low on, you know, the, on the scale of knowledge, I feel like you at like your intro, like I feel very much like a student. And so I'm always learning. I'm trying to always learn. And even the more I learn, I feel like the less I know, you know what I mean? Like it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, the amount of knowledge that's out there that I could avail myself of. And so I just put on my, you know, practitioner hat and I went home and started to do my own little rehab protocol. And so for weeks I was like, okay, I'm just going to go test this out. And I just, for me, like I just got so much more information. Like now I know what ranges of motion I need to work on. Now I know how I need to load it because I had really been babying it up to this point.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to go, like you have to kind of go to that window a little bit of like, okay, where's like hurt and harm, right? Is this hurting me or is this harming me? Like, it might not feel great, but it's not harming the recovery process. And it might actually help rebuild a stronger joint. And I always, I talk about that a lot with rehab stuff. It's like, take the discomfort maybe to like a 6 out of 10 and then back off. And then if you get to a 7 out of 10, like, okay, stop. Like harm is not good. We don't want harm into our joints, but we do want to kind of push it a little bit, not like so much, but we do want to create a little bit of, I'm not sure if the right term, like you stress and distress, like there's a good form of stress where it's like, let's give it a little bit of stress. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about pain?
Yeah. Well, pain is very subjective, right? So like my pain and your pain are two totally different things. So pain is really hard to talk about because it's so, there's this really cool experience where this guy, he was working on a roof and, you know, a nail went through his boot and he's like, oh my God. And went to the hospital and like took an x-ray with his boot on. The nail was through his boot. Like they're like, holy shit. Like it was a lot of pain. They took a shoe off and the nail had missed everything and just gone through his sock. Like it wasn't actually in his bone. So we create these stories about pain in our head and in our brain and in our body, and we experience them places, you know? And so like some people are very stoic and like they can take on a lot of pain and you're like, shit, man, like your tolerance is high. Pain is weird. Pain can really bring people down though. Like when people are in chronic pain, you're very, very, very sensitive to certain things. The littlest thing can set you into a cycle of pain. I would say there's a big, big correlation with cortisol and mitochondrial production. So like how is your body repairing itself? How is your body bathing itself? So when cortisol is high, when your stress levels are high and you experience a lot of pain, little things can set you off into a pattern. Mm-hmm. And then mitochondria, it's like, is your body actually rebuilding and regenerating and taking on oxygen? So pain is weird. I don't know what else to say about pain.
Yeah.
I would say listen to pain, right? Pain to me is like, this acronym, pay attention in the now. Mm. So like if you have pain, like for me, right? I actually have a pain pattern right now from a couple weeks ago. I haven't rolled jiu-jitsu in months and I decided to like roll jiu-jitsu with with like blue belts, and I'm a, like, if anything, a white belt. I can't consider myself a white belt because I don't even roll, but my kids roll, my wife roll, and they're really good. And so I wanted to roll. And so I was rolling, and the next day I was like, oh shit, man, my back, my thoracic spine. Like, I know in my body that my thoracic spine around T4 has a wedged vertebra, which means like the bone itself is actually shaped differently, which puts me at a disc, an increased disc pressure to have a disc herniation in my thoracic spine. Most people have disc herniations in their lumbar spine, but you can get them anywhere. And so I actually have a disc issue right now in my thoracic spine. And so for me, it's like, okay, I have pain there right now, but what am I going to do with it? Mm-hmm. Am I going to freeze and like lean away from it? Because that's what I did the first couple of days.
Yep.
Or am I going to say, okay, how do I open up and how do I create breath and bring breath there? And how do I bring space to that spot? And how do I load it, right? How do I bring about some barrier? I don't know if barrier is the right word. A buffering zone of like, all right, let's load it and piss it off a little bit, but let's also honor the fact that it hurts. So yeah, pain, I think, is just like, pay attention, go into your eyes, go into your head, go into your heart. Like, what's this saying? Is this really like, can you do something with it? Can you bring breath there and just navigate it? Can you mobilize it? Or is there something going on? And I think intuitively, many people, I think when we go into certain medical systems, oh, nothing's wrong. You're fine. Like, your blood labs are fine. Like, don't worry about it. Or like, no, there's nothing on the x-ray. It's like, yeah, but I feel like there's something really going on. Yeah. And so I would say find a provider or find somebody that can like listen to you and talk you through it and walk you through it. Because most likely your intuition is right. And there might be something going on. It might not be there at that spot. It might be somewhere else. But don't ignore, I would say don't ignore pain.
Yeah. I think that's a really good advice, because as runners, as ultra runners, there's a good percentage of us that do have sort of, I would say, like a high tolerance for pain or a high capacity for pain and discomfort. And it can be tricky because it's sort of glorified in this sport to like suffer. And you'll never hear me use that word because like I don't subscribe to that theory about suffering in terms of, you know, you have to suffer for your sport. But like there are a high percentage of us that are capable of doing that. And it's glorified to the point where, you know, people are doing quote unquote crazy things under the umbrella, under the auspices of like, oh, I'm an ultra runner, I'm a trail runner. Like, this is par for the course. Like, I should be in this much pain. And I think that's my biggest pet peeve. And part of the, like, a lot of the women that come to work with me in my group have come from other places and other coaches and other philosophies where it's a no pain, no gain scenario.
Yeah.
And it really pisses me off because, sure, there's going to be some discomfort when it comes to training, right? Like, it's going to be challenging. You're going to run some miles. It's going to be new and different. But I don't ever subscribe to the idea that it should be painful in any way, shape, or form, because it's, in my point of view is that it's going to be counterproductive. Like, if you're in pain 100% of the time, to your point earlier about the nervous system, like, you're actually doing the opposite of what you want. Like, you're not going to get the result that you're seeking.
Yeah. I really don't like the no pain, no gain mentality. I think clients that say that to me, it's like, oh yeah, just do it, doc. No pain, no gain. It's like, well, I don't know, man. Like, there's a fine line. Like, I don't want to be jamming this. I don't want to be jamming my thumb in this spot. If it really hurts you, like, we should work around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, again, when there's so much pain for so long, the body will freeze and it'll avoid certain movements, and then it'll compensate. And then as it compensates, it adapts, and then it's going to adapt into this really weird pattern. And then you're going to be like, why does this person walk like that? Or why does this person move that way? It's like, because there was once pain that they ignored and their body compensated and it adapted into a pattern of compression. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Yeah, that's sort of what I'm trying to work through with my foot right now. And there have been a couple instances where I like put my foot in a certain position and like did something, and it was probably like a 6 or a 7 on the scale, like you talked about. But then the next day, it felt so much better. I was like, oh, that's okay. But my brain did not immediately go to the place of more of that is better, which I think some people do too. They're like, oh, if it made it feel, you know, that much better in just one session the next day, then I should do more of that. And like, there might be an argument for doing some more of that, but maybe not to that extent, right? But yeah, it sort of like all ties into, you know, the more is better, no pain, no gain, you know. And unfortunately, that's kind of a prevalent wind when it, in like trail running and ultra running sometimes. And so I'm sort of like trying to remind people that like you can do it this other way that doesn't have to be so like detrimental to your overall physical, mental, emotional, you know, nervous system health.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think with old pain patterns, say somebody has had an old pain pattern that they've just let go and they've just kind of really bogged them down. There's, you know, there is a time and place for a pro-inflammatory therapy where it's like, we're going to beat this thing up today, but we're going to let you recover. Right. And we're not going to touch it for 4 or 5 days, but then we're going to do it again.
Yeah.
And then we're going to let you recover for 4 or 5 days. Don't piss it off. Don't do anything, like rest. And then there's a time and place for it's like, oh, this is a new injury. Like, let's let it chill. Like, let's not piss it off. Like, let's not do these intense modalities. Yeah, you just have to know, like, okay, do I inflame this? Do I not inflame this?
Yeah. That's not a decision I think that we as athletes are always qualified to make, though.
Yeah, and I think that's where a clinician can definitely start to say, okay, is this a tendinitis, is this a tendinosis, is this tendinopathy? Like, where does this fall? What are the tests that I know how to do going to lead me? This is where my recommendation would be, or a clinician's recommendation would be wise.
Yeah. Yeah. A while back you had asked to borrow my running pack because you were going to pass a friend at an ultra.
Yeah.
Are you doing, I mean, I know like the weather is not like all that amazing these days, but are you going to do any races or any more pacing?
Well, so like that didn't go down cause it was the Vermont 100 and it rained, it like that was flooded. Right. And so Eric and his buddies, his whole crew still came up to Vermont and we still, it was like awesome. Cause then I was like, oh, we don't have to run, but guess what? We still ran. And I was like, Eric, we're still running today. And he's like, yeah, we're going to run. And so I ran 10 miles with him and I was like, it was fun. And, but I was like, all right, I'm going to be done, man. Like that was my pace. And he's like, well, I'm going to keep running. I was like, see you later. Like, but it was cool because these guys were like, they just like, they love to run. And like, that's their life. It's like, we're going to run. We're going to like eat a bunch of carbs tonight and we're going to do all these things and we're going to run tomorrow. So I had a really good time like with that crew. It was a big party. And I wish we had actually done the race because like, they seem like a fun crew to like do a race with. Like, he's done like all sorts of different ultras and his mom was there and she's like, oh, Eric's crazy. Like, I can't believe he does this. I'm really interested in doing like the Squam. There's a race up on Squam, the lakes region. I would really like to do that. I don't have anything in my mind as far as a run or race. I always do the Peterborough, like Turkey Trot, that 5K. Yep. So this year, I think it's around November. I came in, what did I come in? I think for my age group, I came in third. And so I really want to come in first for my age group this year. So
I love it.
I'm gonna work on that.
You've got some fast competition. I know the couple people that are on that list. Like
I know
Ruben Lyons is on that list, and who else? There's a couple younger kids.
It was like I think the fastest or whoever ran it was like either 17 or maybe 16 minutes. I don't know, one of those. And I was at like 21. I was like, dang, because I remember in high school, you know, my 5K like pace was like 17 minutes. And I was like, oh, sweet. Like I can do like 17. And in my mind at 35, I'm like, I can do that again.
Absolutely. And
then, yeah. And yeah. So when I did it, I was like, damn, 21 minutes. I was like, that's not bad. Like I'll take it.
That is but, so fast. That is so fast.
Thanks.
I mean, like, you know, and that's sure. Like, you know, everything is relative, right? Like there are people who think like, oh, you know, a 10-minute mile is fast. Some people think obviously like, you know, people, the professionals breaking 4 minutes, you know, it's like, it's all relative to the sport that you're doing and the background and the history that you have. But it's just so funny to me. And it's, I think I definitely belong in the, on the trails and doing ultras because I'm like, I have no desire to go that fast.
Yeah. Right. I know my kids ran it this year, and they came, I think they ran it in like 29 minutes. And I was like, dang, dude, for your little legs, like, that's pretty quick, man. Like, so they were excited, and we'll do it again next year. But I remember the first year I did it, I like ran with my kids, and they would sprint and then they would stop.
Yes.
And then they'd sprint and they'd stop. And I'm like, I can't do this. Like, I'm out. I'm going to go run. I'll turn around. But this year I was like, listen, I'm not waiting for you. I'm going. And, I had a lot of fun. Cause then I did turn around and go find them. Actually, I didn't this year. I didn't, I just waited for them. And, yeah, it was cool.
They weren't that far behind you though. They must have seen you take off,
weren't.
And they were like,
yeah.
We don't want to be left in the dust. So
yeah.
That's great. Do they like to run just normal? Is that like something that they do, or they just, do they play other sports?
Yeah, they do jujitsu. They love riding their bikes. What else do they like to do? They like to go in the woods and do random stuff that I don't know about, which is fine. But yeah, their main sport right now is jujitsu. So that's
awesome.
Pretty like fast paced, like, well, I wouldn't say fast paced, but a lot of endurance in that. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that's something that I've considered doing, but then I'm like, I don't know. Like, maybe I want to
there's a Monday women's class.
Is there?
That my wife goes to. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They're always looking for new women. She was really timid at first. My wife was like, I don't know if I should do this, but like, when you do it and you learn the correct ways to do it and you realize that you're not there to beat each other up, like you're there to train and you're not there to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
She loves it, man. She's like addicted right now. She goes to probably 2 or 3 classes a week. But she does come home with her neck totally sideways and like, oh, messed my neck up. And I'm like, dude, sometimes I'm like, I don't even feel bad anymore. Like, lay down, let's get this adjusted and good luck.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll have to convince my husband to become a chiropractor so I can take up jujitsu.
Yeah.
It seems like a nice perk.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Well, is there anything that we missed that you wanted to be sure that you shared with everybody about, you know, chiropractic or running in chiropractic, any of that fun stuff, any knowledge bombs you want to drop on us?
No, I would just say, like, you know, make sure like you have fun with whatever you're doing, whether it's a sport, whether it's like going to a chiropractor, like make sure it's a fun experience and not like a, ugh, got to do this. Because when there's fun, it doesn't feel like a job. It doesn't feel like a sport. It's like, oh, this is a cool passion of mine. Mm-hmm. So I would just encourage whoever listens to this to like continue to have fun and take breaks when you need to take breaks, and reach out for help. Like, that's the biggest thing. It's like, that's the hardest step, but once you do it, you better yourself. Like, I reach out to mentors all the time, and I find coaches all the time that I'm like, I need help with this. Mm-hmm. And once you do it, you're like, oh, sweet. Why did I wait so long?
Yes.
So like, reach out for help. That's the first start of like any beautiful growth pattern in anybody's life. So
yes. Oh, I couldn't agree more. Absolutely.
Nice. Cool. Thanks, Megan. This was fun.
Well, I hope that you guys enjoyed that conversation. Dr. Matthew is amazing. So if you live in and around the Keene, New Hampshire area, I would highly recommend that you go check him out. I'm going to drop all the links to his website and his social media in the show notes below. So make sure that you go over there, say hi, tell him you heard the episode, and maybe book an assessment, an appointment with him. If you are listening in real time, it is Friday, April 5th, and that means today is the last day to join the She Runs Ultras membership community. So just as a quick recap, if you have not heard about this before, this is my members only, exclusively for women, little corner of the internet, where I coach you in small groups and one-on-one on training for your very first 50K. Now, let's talk about the timeline for a second here. Doors will close this Friday, and then they won't open again until July. So if you have a July, August, or September race, this is the time for you to join, because you will want to have a solid 20 weeks to train for that race. So check your calendars, and then head on over to SheRunsUltras.com to snag your spot, okay? Doors close at 9 p.m. Eastern or when spots sell out. And we are 90% sold as of right now. Okay. So make sure you go and snag that spot. If you've got questions, you're not sure if the membership is right for you, send me a DM, right? Oh, and the other thing I wanted to remind you guys of is that I officially changed my username on Instagram, and I'm going to mess this up so many times because I am so used to saying you can find me at Find Your Ultra on Instagram, but that's no longer the case. Now you can find me at She Runs Ultras over on Instagram. All right. So if you've got questions about the membership, send me a DM or shoot me an email, megan@megan-gould.com, or send me a carrier pigeon. I don't know. I don't know, you guys. There's so much snow here today. I think maybe I have officially lost it. And that's all for this episode, you guys. Enjoy this beat, and I'll see you all soon.